So Dogen says in this text on the Bodhisattva's Four Methods of Guidance, you should be willing to practice it for this entire present life. Do not give up, world after world, life after life. Kind speech is the basis for reconciling rulers and subduing enemies. You should be willing to practice it for this entire present life. Do not give up, world after world, life after life. So we might wonder why Dogen exhorts us to not give up until we have a day perhaps like today. Probably all of you know, but if you don't know, some terrible events happened today in Boston. Of course, terrible events are happening every moment all over the world. It's just the way it is. It's just the way it is. This is indeed a world that's filled with suffering. The Buddha himself, before there was an internet and rapid communication, knew this and referred to this burning world. So we know this on a personal level through our own suffering. We know it on now a worldwide level, full of suffering. Things happen in one place, and in just a short amount of time, everyone knows what's happening. There is terrible destruction at the heart of human beings. We are capable of great acts of violence. We are capable of unkind actions and speech. I asked Steve to lead us tonight in the slightly longer version of the Three Refuges, which are part of our shorter precepts recitation, as well as the Three Pure Precepts, because they immediately came to my mind. They immediately came to my mind when I heard the news this afternoon about the bombings in Boston at the marathon. Just before I came down for our evening practice, I checked the internet to see what the latest news was. And the victims of the bombing, the numbers just keep going up and up and up. Two people confirmed dead, but now 73 people, at least from a half an hour ago, injured, some of them very, very seriously injured. Some of them have had their lives destroyed, even though they're still alive in a moment. All of the 75 people who are directly affected by this, it ripples out. All of the families and the loved ones of these 75 people, all of the responders to the disaster, the firefighters, the nurses and doctors at Brigham and Women's Hospital, which has been turned over to dealing with the aftermath of the bombings. All of these people, the police, the federal agents who are seeking the perpetrator or perpetrators of this bombing, already found two more bombs that didn't go off. So we can really feel the interconnection of humanity at a moment like this. And of course it brings up all the other moments when as human beings together, we heard terrible news. The terrible news happens, the terrible events happen, and what is our responsibility here? To try to save the world? That sounds a little bit ridiculous until you begin to practice Zen Buddhism. And then it doesn't sound so ridiculous because we take vows to save all beings. We say in the Three Pure Precepts, not knowing, thereby giving up fixed ideas about myself and the universe. Not knowing, thereby giving up fixed ideas about myself and the universe, I vow to cease from evil. All week at the Anga, we've been talking about the Bodhisattva practices of generosity and kind speech, and have investigated these on a very deep level and seen again and again through the words of the different teachers, senior Dharma teachers and Dharma teachers who've given talks so far, how at the base of this teaching is the realization that we are not separate beings. We are not capable of being cut off from any other person, although we try really hard. We try through any means necessary. Once we start to encounter the heartbreaking quality of human life, and for some of us this begins when we're very young, we do our best to run away from it. You know this. Everyone in this room has tried to run from suffering, sometimes in very extreme ways through substance abuse and drinking, sometimes through our behaviors where we've caused harm to other people, really in an attempt to shove away that deeper, sweet feeling of connection. Because when we encounter suffering, it breaks our hearts. And sometimes it's just too much to bear, or at least we think it is. We talk about the unbearable, the unspeakable, but in reality, we can speak about these things. We can bear these things, but the bearing of them is not ordinary bearing. It's not bucking up and being some kind of brave hero. It's being a bodhisattva, a being who hears and sees and feels the suffering of the world and is deeply transformed by that suffering. So at a certain point we realize that all the strategies we have tried our whole life, and they could even just be simple cognitive strategies, just trying to think good thoughts or trying to be nice, and we've seen and we've talked about the fallacy of that as well. It's not about being nice. It's not about thinking good thoughts. It's not even about doing the, in quotes, right thing. It's about responding to suffering. So at the heart of all of us is this great capacity for destruction, a great capacity for evil. Everyone is capable of it. I remember right after the Newtown shootings, all those children who were killed by that poor, suffering being whose only choice, you can only imagine, was to do this unbelievable, destructive act. It's hard to imagine being that desperate, but maybe you can exercise the power of your imagination and feel what it would be like to be that cut off from the consequences of your actions. Maybe you've already done something in your own life through harsh speech or harsh action that has hurt another human being. I don't think there's anybody in here who can't admit that that's happened. So our job is not to try to ignore the destructive capacity that we all have. Right after the Newtown shootings, I heard a police officer, a woman police officer from the Boston Police Force, being interviewed about what she thought about gun control, and she was all for it. She said, because I have a gun, and it took me a long time to learn how to use it. It's a really dangerous thing to have. And I know that sometimes I've gotten angry, and I've wanted to reach for that weapon and strike out against the world. She said, we don't want to give weapons to people who haven't been thoroughly trained in not using them, because everybody gets angry. I thought this was an amazing thing for her to admit. It felt really true to me. So we have to, in some way, welcome these angry feelings, these violent tendencies, with the great heart of the Bodhisattva. Opening to the true fact, the undeniable fact, that every single one of us is capable of great destruction. And so we say in our three pure precepts, we vow to avoid evil, but we do it through recognizing our interconnection and not fixating on any idea about self and other, good and bad, right and wrong. We work to reconcile differences in our own hearts. The second pure precept says bearing witness to the joy and suffering of the world, I vow to practice good. We can't just be goody-two-shoes, good guys, nice people. We have to bear witness to the joy and the suffering of the world, the whole thing. We can't ignore anything. We can't contribute to the fragmenting of life. And then we say, healing myself and others, I vow to save all beings. This doesn't mean we go out on some crusade marching through the streets saving all beings. I don't even know what that would look like or feel like. Maybe your imagination can make up a story about it. This begins right here, in this room. In this room where we're sitting in our Anga practice, our peaceful dwelling place practice. Not an ironic phrase, a true phrase. Because at the heart of the great destructive capacity of humanity and at the heart of the great sorrow and suffering that we all experience is this little tiny speck of an ember of remembering. And that little tiny speck of an echo of remembering, a little ember of remembering, can be fanned into a flame. The flame of our practice, the power of our practice to wake us up to everything. And then, of course, we get to take refuge. We take refuge in the three treasures of Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. In oneness, the awakened nature of all beings. This is taking refuge in the Buddha. The awakened nature of all beings. We were pointing to that this morning in Mike's beautiful talk about how the Bodhisattva, Dominic, caught the Bodhisattva Ed as he was fainting. And the Bodhisattva Nat bowed and began walking, everyone functioning perfectly. This is something that we can trust, this awakened nature, but remembering that it's so easy for us to be drawn away from it into division, into harm. And the Dharma, the diversity, the ocean of wisdom and compassion, we take refuge in this great teaching that points us again and again to the beauty of the vast array of bodhisattvas, all the different flavors, as Julie said, the Baskin-Robbins version of Buddhism. So here we are, all the bodhisattvas in the room, sitting, all the bodhisattvas in the world, each doing their part. Perhaps, if there has been a speck of awakening, to contribute to healing. And then, of course, we take refuge in the Sangha, in harmony, in the interdependence of all, this real sureness, not an idea, but a real sense, a physical sense, that we are connected. So when we hear news like the news of the Boston Marathon bombings, we feel the suffering, not exactly the same, of course, as the people who were right there or the people who were directly harmed, But even indirectly, we recognize that there is no indirectness. There's just one thing going on. We are completely interdependent. The ripples of the effect aren't just affecting the people that I mentioned, the victims and their families and the responders and the nurses and the doctors, on and on and on, because all those people also have friends and family, and all those people also have friends and family, and all over the world it goes. I posted on Facebook about how we chanted for the Bodhisattva of Compassion when we heard the news here this afternoon, and already that effect is rippling out. Many, many people on Facebook reassuring each other, I'm okay, I'm okay, so-and-so is okay. So-and-so is okay. Here's what you can do. You can make sure that everyone knows that you're okay. That's what one of the news outlets recommended. Tell people that you're okay. Reassure them, just like our daughter reassured us this afternoon. So Dogen says that we have to keep doing this work. We can't give up, because it is a work of a lifetime. There's no moment when we solve all our problems and check off all the boxes and say, great, done, now I'm awake, now everything will be fine. Things will continue to be terrible. I'm not saying this to upset anybody, it's just an observation. Sickness, old age, and death will continue. I was talking to a friend before the Angha who said that she'd always been afraid that someday something terrible was going to happen. And I looked at her and I said, you know what? Something terrible is going to happen. And she laughed. When we realize that the thing that is terrible will happen, but also the other side of the terror, the feeling of connection, will also happen, then we understand a little bit of Dogen's meaning. And just to reiterate this amazing phrase, do not give up. Do not give up world after world, life after life. Dogen may be referring to some idea about many lifetimes, but I like to think that what he's really talking about is the unscrolling of all the moments of this lifetime that are yet to come. World after world, life after life. Don't give up opening your heart. No matter how wounded it gets, don't give up. Don't ever give up. You already are a bodhisattva. We already are bodhisattvas. How lucky we are to have each other so that we can say something like this out loud to each other. Do not give up. World after world. Life after life. Thank you. So please make yourselves comfortable. We're going to have what we call a Dharma dialogue now. Just going to get to talk about meditation practice, maybe to talk, whatever might be coming up. And we begin this by going around saying our names. I'm Melissa.
Steve.
Fran.
Christine.
Ed.
Matt.
Faye.
Tua.
Lick.
Julie.
Michael.
Diane.
Shane. Corey.
David.
So the day does, you know, bring to mind all of the tragedies, you know, personal and worldwide that we all have been through and know about, and that sort of sense of despair, you know, here we go again, you know, what can we do? So your talk was just so much encouragement that this is what we're doing. And the image of the ember, you know, fanning the ember, that like, there's just this little spark in all of us, and you know, through constant practice and devotion, you know, that's that is our response to the feeling of despair. You know, that's what we can. That's how we can apply ourselves. You know, the feeling that I need to do something now.
Yeah.
So thank you very much. That's.
Japanese word for don't give up. It has a very beautiful sound. It's akirame naide. Akirame naide means don't give up. If you want to say please don't give up, you have to say akirame naide kudasai. If you want to be really forceful at it, you have to say akirame naide nasai. But akirame naide would just be the command form. Don't give up. Don't give up. And I included that in a song, actually, called Don't Give Up, which I included in a choral work for children on the story of the little engine that could. I don't know if you know the story, but it's a little tiny, tiny engine that all these various toys and things keep asking these different engines to pull them up the hill, but they get confronted by an important engine and a busy engine and a very old tire. They all have excuses and reasons why they couldn't possibly. They're at the end of their day. They're going home. They can't bother to pull these toys. So this tiny little blue engine, whose job is really not to pull anything, it's just to move trains around in the switchyard. It's not designed for any long hauls or anything. It's just supposed to be moving around on flat surfaces. Says, you know, I think I can, and so as a result, pulls these toys and these food, whatever is on there, over the mountain. And that's a pretty well-known children story that it just made me think of that. And the interconnection part of it starts early this morning when my friend Claire Schaefer Duffy was here in the room, to my great surprise. I'm sure she's come here. She's a Catholic, and I'm sure she's come here much more often than I've attended Mass. but she's also very involved with the Center for Nonviolent Solutions. And the thing is that her husband, Scott Schaefer Duffy, runs every year in the Boston Marathon. And this morning, Melissa very gently upbraided me. She saw me whispering in Claire's ear, and she thought I was giving Claire instructions. But I was doing something much, much worse. I was actually asking Claire if I remembered her phone number correctly. I'm supposed to do that. I just wanted to make sure, because we hadn't been in touch for a while for various personal reasons, even though we're close friends. But thanks to me asking for her phone number this morning, when I picked up Murray and brought him back to my house, and Murray got right on the internet and found out what was going on with Boston Marathon, and I asked right away, how's Scott? He says, it's okay, Aiden's put a message on the internet out saying that they're all whole family's okay. It's okay. So I was able, having Claire's number in my mind, I was able to call right away and leave a message, which I don't know if it made her feel any better if she ever gets it, but it certainly made me felt like I closed the circle. And was able to at least communicate that I'd heard about it. So I'm really, really thankful that Scott and any of his children who were there with him are all right. Mm-hmm. And I'm sad for the others who are not. But it's just another example of what Melissa was talking about the ripples.
Yeah. Thank you.
Can I say?
Please.
It's what they say, it's a small world. I also know Claire and Scott. And I was at home and I was watching the TV, and Scott is the only person that I've met that every time I'm in Winston, every time I see guys with the signs, running around. I look around because I know I know Scott somewhere. I know he's gonna be running up the street. And when I looked on the news and I seen that, the first person I thought of was Scott. That's the first person because that's the only person I know that loves running. So I just wanted to say it's a small world.
It really is a small world.
Well, and you know, knowing one person makes it real. You know, like there's how many people ran the marathon today? And we might not know any of those people got hurt, but just knowing one person was there, that's the heart connection. Yeah. You know, it doesn't make it real for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really does. Thank you.
No, I hadn't talked to Ken Rivard in 2 years. And last year when there was a mass shooting in Oakland, he left a message and I texted him back and we still didn't quite connect. And I went out after dinner and I knew my son was fine. I knew his girlfriend was fine. I thought, who else do I know who would be near there? It's Ken. And he's fine. And his family is fine. But it's, you know, there are these odd sorts of karmic connections, you know, that some tragedy occurs and it gives rise to the opportunity to make a connection you haven't had.
I'm struck by what you said about the new town person and the whoever the bombers for this turn out to be, and that line that we've read over and over, please treasure yourself. Mm-hmm. And no one who treasured themselves and others then, I just think if that were the case, what a different world it would be.
And I think of the lengths that we human beings go to avoid our pain. And feel fortunate in some way that compared to some things I feel my avoidance has been fairly mild. But think about the importance of our work in meditation, of turning to those parts of ourselves that we just so don't want to be with, and the this ripple effect that our actions have. You know, so we are human beings with the aspiration to look at everything, and of course we fail over and over, but that is our aspiration, and I think our great hope that that makes a difference, that what we do here, aside from transforming us and each other, in some way changes the world. Little, I love, he says, little by little, or ever so gradually, or something. Yeah.
It struck me like a ton of bricks when I came back, after having been away for a few days. Reading that, it was like, no wonder I was so agitated. I didn't treasure myself.
Yeah.
Your mention of the person who did the violence in Newtown, and the theme of not giving up. Reminds me of a gathering I was at a couple of years ago with people who I have profound respect for them getting out of bed in the morning. It was a gathering organized by a group opposing the death penalty for people with mental illness. And everyone in the group had either a family member killed by someone who was mentally ill, or it had a family member who suffered the death penalty for committing crimes. And then the people that blew me away had both. They had family members who had killed other family members. And shooting up in the morning. That's keeping on going. And in the small world line, one of the women in that situation turned out to be the sister-in-law of a graduate student I had in California. And we met in Texas.
Yeah.
I just want to say that I don't know quite how to put it. There's something in sound of, you know, the Four Noble Truths and beginning with this suffering thing and, you know, we turn toward it. Mm-hmm. That stuff that sounds so dark and awful. You know, it's a funny thing that that's kind of the gateway is this all this sadness, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it also is it's not just that.
Right.
It's very beautiful. There's a lot of love in this.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah.
You know, it makes me think that the Buddha, knew himself really well, so therefore knew us,
mm-hmm.
and knew that we do tend to push suffering away.
Yeah.
You know, so he's saying, nope. The way you're really going to open your heart and become loving is to face it directly. And yeah, it can sound, of course, negative, but there are four noble truths. That's just the beginning. Right? So there's being awake to the causes of suffering, which really are this desire for things to be different, wanting, and then to know that you don't have to get caught there. You know, even when you get caught there, knowing that you're caught there is freeing. And then for him to postulate a path for us to take, you know, guidelines right there, 2,600 years ago, two of which are about meditation, and one of which is about speech, you know, speaking with care. So there's right there. That's one of the seeds of Buddhism. It's what we do, you know, in the face of suffering. If you throw the Four Noble Truths all together, you know. Grind them into a paste. Maybe those two things come out. Suffering, do. You know, and then it's transformed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it can so easily be. It's either or. Like I'm.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm suffering still, then I must not have made it to step three yet. You know, or step four, or something like that. And to
mm-hmm.
to see them as all together.
Right. Yeah, they are. They're just all together.
I like your hand gesture.
Yes. It's like a Zen hand gesture. Making a fist and raising it up in the air. Yeah, all well.
Well, the other thing I've been thinking of relative to that is that we also mightily resist joy and peace as well.
Yes, we do.
You know, when we calm down a little bit, we start really panicking. Uh-oh, who am I? And it's quite paradoxical, you know, here we are so committed to this, to waking up and to seeing the beauty, and we can tolerate only a little bit. You know, in some ways we're actually learning to tolerate joy. Tolerate the aliveness without trying to grab onto it or trying to manipulate it or, you know, stick it in our pockets and take it out later. But both those things.
Make it mine.
Yeah.
It happens. Yeah. You know, Steve, when you chanted at the end the return of merit, the dedication, you chose the one that John Tarrant wrote. I'm pretty sure John Tarrant wrote this about the wind blows and the waves fall on the shore, and Guanyin finds us in the dark and broken roads. And then it goes right into, we give thanks to all our ancestors and ants and sticks and grizzly bears. And then let wisdom go to every corner of the house. Let people have joy in each other's joy. It's like, it's another glom together of, the dark and broken roads, joy in each other's joy. And it's also speaking of interconnection. I love all the dedications, but that one really, it's so evocative because I can feel those dark and broken roads sometimes. Yeah. And we're found. And Guanyin is the bodhisattva of compassion. And so she finds us there. And she says, bring it all together. She doesn't say, oh, don't worry, everything's going to be fine. You know, but bring it all together. Right? That's a very different message. And, don't worry, be happy. No. Right? Worry and be happy.
So with that, like you're saying, like you said, embrace the pain, kind of like, and this, it brings me to that saying, you know, that saying that they say, it gets me by a lot. Through every difficulty, there's ease. Mm-hmm. So, and I like what you said when you said something about, like, we try to escape from the pain, but kind of
he was trying to escape from the joy too.
Yeah, trying to escape from the joy too, because I know when me and my girlfriend go through things, and there are times when I wanna say this and I wanna say that. There's times I just want peace, but my ego messes with me so much that I like have to say like a last
word. Can't let it be.
And it escalates, and then when I want peace, when I want it to be peaceful, she keeps coming at me.
And you know that it's really great that you bring that up, because we tend to take a situation like that and say, well, that's not, you know, a meditative life, you know, fighting and all.
Yeah.
But it's actually, the whole thing is, if you can be awake in the middle of having an argument, you know, it's really possible. That's it too. You know, there's love at the root of that as well, isn't there? You know, as much as, you know, they piss you off. But we're happy all the time.
Especially when you're fighting. Yeah.
I brought a friend here. I came here earlier because I see you guys online. I'm very interested in learning to get in tune with myself. Mm-hmm. And I kind of kidnapped him. He didn't know where he was.
Oh my God. You know, he's doing great. He used to be doing great.
You know, I really never been through nothing like this. And, you know, something that you did say really got to me. It was like when you were talking about the lady in Boston who admitted, you know, the feeling she was going through. That was real deep for me. And then the part where, you know, I started to look at me as far as, like, what have I done, you know, in situations like the person in Newtown, like, maybe not to that serious degree, but I have been in situations like that where I have acted out, you know, and I really, you know, not until I came here and heard, you know, you talking about that, I ever think like what I was doing, like, because it wasn't to a serious degree as somebody else. And then when you had set up the things that we would do to stop from going through the feelings of pain, you know, like in a lot of things, like you know, instead of just feeling them, a lot of things you try to do to avoid the feeling.
Yeah.
And that was real. don't know. God's in
it. Well, thank you. Thank you both for coming.
We're certainly, we hope we see you again.
Please feel free.
Fantastic. People come and go. This is the open house for Trieste.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks.
Everybody can
thanks.
Come again.
Please. Look forward to seeing you again. Anything else before we close? Well, and one more thing. Steve, no, please. Steve.
Well, I just was reflecting a little bit on what David said about this resistance to... Well, in my case, I think it's more resistance to peace rather than resistance to joy. I mean, let's not go to joy. I'm perfectly happy when the joy comes, to tell you the truth. But this peace thing, I have a great deal of difficulty with, where I find, you know, it's just what you said. I don't really recognize myself in that state, you know. I think that I need to be pushing, you know. Right. I need to be fixing. I just can't just, you know, chill. it's a very strange thing, you know. But I think it's something really worth investigation, because I have been noticing that, you know, like when I sit. You know, some people say that when they do meditation, that it makes them feel good. You know, and that's an experience that I rarely have. I'm sorry, it just doesn't work like that for me. You know, sometimes I get a sense of accomplishment, you know? but I never just sit there. Oh, isn't this nice? You know, to sit here on the cushion and get a little peace. It just doesn't show up for me. And
it hasn't up till this point. Never know what the next round is.
Yeah, could be the big one.
I have a slightly different memory of meeting you when you had just started meditating. And I think you did get a little peace way back maybe the first week or two meeting at Spring Hill.
I do, very.
Oh, meditation! It's so cool, man. Through the days. But you know, I think you're partly pointing to some of us are passion junkies, like intensity junkies. And when everything settles down, it's like, when's the next thing? And we can even generate some of that for ourselves, right? So, it's this unfamiliar feeling of being at ease. It's weird.
I think it's also about this construction business we've talked about, that in some way we're always quite actively reasserting the reality of our ego and reasserting the reality of our story about who we are. And if we don't constantly reify it, it actually begins to fade away, right? It's not, because you can't try to take it apart, as Melissa, you said the other night. So I think as we slow down a little bit, it gets a little scary, because things get a little thin in terms of the grounding, that we think the grounding is, well, I know who I am.
Yeah.
I'm the one who struggles, works hard, who's kind, who's, you know, and even if it's a negative story, it works just fine for the ego. It's quite solid. A negative story is, you know, quite resonant, and oh, I am just a terrible person, you know?
Yummy.
You
know? So familiar.
Yeah. So to see that, and so I think even to begin to notice how it gets a little shaky when we slow down in some way, when we become more peaceful.
So, interesting. Thank you all.